Evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Lori, Jesse Bell, Isabella Garrido, Abiyaz Karim, and Jaya Kumar. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Lori, and here are your local news headlines. As the proposed soccer stadium at the Memorial Centre comes before council at their next meeting, community members have been expressing concerns regarding the plans. Since news of a potential soccer stadium at the Memorial Center broke last week, community members have expressed several concerns about the impact on the surrounding area. The site proposed is currently home to part of an off-leash dog park, agricultural barns, and open green space. With Williamsville being the most densely populated district in the city, community members expressed concerns both at the information sessions hosted by potential developer Victory Grounds Ventures and via social media regarding added traffic, insufficient parking, noise, lights, and the general disruption the 5,000-person capacity stadium could bring. Other issues at the center of the discussion have been surrounding the potential impact on community events which normally take place in that space, including the Memorial Center Farmers Market and the Fall Fair. The suggested removal of the barns is an especially large concern for the market, as they're used as an indoor space for the Memorial Center Farmers Market in the winter. The Memorial Center Farmers Market has been a prominent voice in advocating to halt the project. Market manager Emma Barkin spoke with CFRC on Friday to share her thoughts on the proposal and how the city should move forward.
Just sorting broadly, what are your concerns with this development?
Our main concern is the speed at which all of this is happening. We found out about this on Monday and it's now Friday. So we are wrapping our heads around what's being proposed and what that means for us. But at this point, we just want to pause. We want to be able to talk. We want to actually be able to hear what everybody has to say and how that affects us, because we really don't have a lot of details right now other than the public messaging that's come out from our mayor and from Tourism Kingston and from the developer.
And so far, the only for sure impact this would have on the market, I suppose, would be the barns not being there anymore. I was wondering if you could speak to that and other potential impacts that you think this development would have on the market.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, the most striking issue is the fact that the mayor has said that the barns would need to be removed to make way for parking on site for this development. We need a site. We need a winter indoor location, and we need that to happen before the current one is torn down, if that's even something that would happen. The rest of the development, we really haven't wrapped our heads around exactly what that means for us. Obviously, we aren't opposed to soccer in Kingston, and we know that the soccer community needs more locations to play. We have concerns about the location in terms of traffic congestion and what that means for people being able to access local food and the impact that that would have on the stability of the market for our agricultural community, for farmers to make money. We have been in contact with the Lansdowne Farmers Market in Ottawa, who has a similar situation where they have game days that seriously interrupt the flow of traffic and the ability for people to access local fresh food.
And I believe folks will be present at the meeting on Tuesday and are also here advocating at the information session today. Do you think there is a potential compromise, or do you think this just isn't the right fit?
I think that we're hoping for a slowdown. We're hoping for a pause on this so that we can talk to all of the community groups that use the Memorial Center right now and find out what everybody's needs are. And maybe that can work. We don't know. We just don't have enough information. So what we're hoping for on Tuesday is an amendment to the options that are being presented in front of council. And that amendment would say something along the lines of talking with community groups, making sure that everybody who already uses this important site in Kingston has access and is still able to do what they want to do. We're hoping for people to show up, basically, at the meeting and to show their support for a slowdown on this report.
And running the market, I'm sure you do have a connection in general with the community here. Do you have any other concerns in terms of how the stadium could affect the Memorial Center and the surrounding community?
Sure. I mean, we're closely aligned with the community, and there are tons of concerns in terms of traffic and noise and light pollution and all of those kinds of things. We share those concerns for sure. And we just don't have enough information yet to know exactly how that would fit.
Anne Godlewska, owner of Shock Chic, a regular vendor at the Memorial Center Farmers Market, also shared her thoughts on the proposal with CFRC.
I'm happy to see a stadium developed here. I'm happy to see the city embrace new ventures, but I think it also has to look at what works, what is already here and working, and it has to protect that. It has to nurture and protect what has been a remarkable market for a long time, for a lot longer than I've been involved with it, actually. A lot longer. If they can find a venue that is year-round and more viable than this, I think everybody would be interested in hearing about it. Because I think the barn is, you know, the barn is quite old. They've done a lot of work in renovating that barn, and that's fantastic. It's been really important to do that. But if they have an alternative that is even better, fantastic. For the winter, absolutely fantastic. The summer, this is a really ideal place. It's beautiful, tree-covered, grassy. People walk through. It's part of the neighborhood as well as being a market. So that I would not want to see damaged. But I think there has to be something for the winter, too, for the producers.
A petition opposing the proposal has now garnered over 4,700 signatures with a goal of 5,000. The poll on Mayor Brian Patterson's Instagram page gauging community interest has shifted from 86% approval to 78% since Friday. Manager of Victory Grounds Ventures, Paul Barbeau, sat down with CFRC to discuss the feedback their proposal has received so far.
One of the biggest concerns that was raised last week was the farmers markets and the fall fair being impacted by the stadium. Were these things you'd known about before, and what's your response to these concerns?
So, yes, I didn't know about both those before. And the fall fair, you know, I think there's a dialogue that I would like to have with them, because I think there are a way we can both cohabitate on the land. When it comes to the farmers market, I'm supportive of the farmers market, and I hadn't thought that there would be any impact. In fact, I thought that there would be a great influx of buyers to the farmers market on game days. So, in my conversations with the city about a location for the farmers market to operate out of in the winter, this is something that we all want to work together to create. So there's so while I did know about those, this is, I thought there could be easily solutions for both those two items.
Mm-hmm. And I think the other item there was the impact on the surrounding neighborhood in terms of traffic and lights and noise. What was your response to the concerns there?
So one thing that I think people forget is that this site was used for 40 plus Frontenac games that had 3,000 people attending. When these homeowners bought this house, this is what the land was slated to be used for and still is slated to be used for. We're not changing anything to do with the current use of that land. And in fact, that land has been used as a sport location for since the 40s, when it was a horse racing track. So, you know, these are things that we're looking at, taking the traffic and trying to push it to remote locations like you see in Europe and in other cities in Canada and the U.S., where you have a shuttle system going from remote parking lots and people walk to the location. So I felt that it would be less impact than the historical use for that site, which is typically also in the winter. And in the winter, people do not take transit and do not walk. They drive their cars. So I felt that the use of that land and parking will be considerably less than what is currently used historically, even at venues like Ribfest or the car show, all that have 4,000 supposedly people coming to those events.
And I believe most of the end of last week was spent receiving these comments and sitting down with community members and having these conversations. How did that go?
I think it went well. A lot of misinformation was out there, but I think we hope to correct what people are saying. You know, we did not wish to take the barns down. That is nothing we asked the city to do. In fact, we're looking to work with the city on a way to see what can work. So these are things that I think there was a lot of misinformation out there. And I look forward to meeting with individuals for a total of 8 hours in 2 days or 6 hours in 1 day to hear their concerns and understand it. And this is the first step of many, many steps. And we're looking forward to continuing the conversation with the community and social groups and community groups and community events.
Option two is to look at other sites around the city. Would you be open to that? Or do you think that this is probably the best site that we have right now?
We looked extensively at all sites across the city. And again, we had a matrix to go through what would work in a variety of things, cost to the city to get the land ready, the displacement of existing use or the future use. So we spent a lot of time to look at all land packages. This isn't something that we just came in and said, this is the land package we want. We looked at multiple land packages to determine that this was the best package. At this stage, I don't know of another land package that would work as well as this site. This is zoned for what we want to do. As I said, this is used for what we want to do. So we're not changing the use of this land in any way, shape, or form. So to answer your question is, we feel this is the only piece of land that matches our criteria, that one of which was walkability, accessibility, close to businesses, impact to the city for investing in infrastructure. So these are all things we feel this is the only location for that.
Should an amendment be proposed to postpone the decision, would that likely have an impact on the likelihood of professional teams coming here or impact the project in any other way?
I guess the quick answer saying is most likely. There are a number of things we're looking to do, and that would affect the timeline. Again, what we're saying is we just wish to start the public consultation process, the negotiation process. We're not looking at the meeting today the meeting tomorrow. It's purely for that reason. Delaying that doesn't seem to make sense because it's just going to delay the process that we're about to start and that we would have to start anyways.
Barbo also stressed that should council choose the option to move forward with Victory Grounds Ventures, that would not mean an immediate go-ahead on construction of the actual stadium.
Council isn't being asked to agree to any of these things. All council is being asked to do is to allow the city to have communications and public consultations and communicate with me and work with me on this project. That's all the city council is being asked for. In that process, we'll come out with a plan that will come back to council, which would have everything firmed up, spoken out, like vetted out with input from the community. So that's the biggest confusion people have, is what the question or what the ask is. The ask isn't going to be destroying what's there. The ask is just saying, please, let's have a conversation on this plot of land. And we've looked at land all throughout the city, and it was and we had a criteria to look at of what works and what doesn't work with city. And this site determined to be the best site across the whole city that is already zoned for what we're trying to do, already used for what we're trying to do. All we're doing is replacing a puck with a ball.
Would that mean that there would be another decision required to actually begin building and to break ground on this project?
100%. It would have to go back to council. Our plan is to go back to council in March. 100%. This, whatever the solution we come up with, what I come up with the city and the community, so we'll have to come back to council and have to be voted on by the councilors.
Council will be deciding between three options at their Tuesday night meeting: moving forward with Victory Grounds Ventures, looking for alternative sites for the stadium, or dropping the project. Many who are skeptical of the proposal are hoping for a fourth option to be added, which would postpone this decision.
That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Jaya and Abiyaz with Campus Corner, the latest in Queen's campus news.
Thank you. In campus news, the AMS elections and referenda are just around the corner. The nomination period for the AMS executive election, the rector election, and the referendum group seeking new, continuing, or increased student fees runs from January 13th to January 16th. Candidates, clubs, and other groups seeking student fees that intend to campaign must gather at least 204 nomination signatures to be submitted online and submitted to the Chief Electoral Officer, Rebecca Feldman, by January 16th at noon. Nominations are submitted, the ratification assembly will be held on January 20th at 6 p.m. This assembly is an important step in the election process as it confirms both the candidates and fee-seeking group's candidacy to run for election or secure a student fee. Information about attending the assembly can be found directly on the AMS website. The campaign period runs from January 22nd to January 28th. During this time, candidates and fee-seeking groups will share their platforms, run social media campaigns, post posters around campus, and host events to garner support. The Chief Electoral Officer has to approve all campaign materials before they are shared. Then, voting days for AMS elections and referenda will run on both January 29th and January 30th. In other campus news, student and alumni-led groups running projects that promote innovation, inclusion, or community engagement, such as planning a conference, a festival, or an equity, diversity, inclusion, and indigenization program, are invited to apply for a Queen's University Alumni Association grant. Applications are open from January 10th to February 5th and can be accessed via the Queen's University Alumni Association board website. In other campus news, the Queen's Musical Theater Alumni Gala will take place at the Tet Center, with weeknight shows running on January 15th, 22nd, and 23rd at 7 p.m., and weekend matinees on January 18th, 25th, and 26th at 1:30 p.m. This year, Queen's Musical Theater will run a performance of Sunday in the Park with George. Information, including ticket information, can be found via the Queen's Musical Theater Instagram page now.
Thank you very much. The Society of Graduate and Professional Students, commonly known as the SGPS at Queen's University, has kicked off its election period for 2025, an opportunity for graduate and professional students to step into leadership roles and shape their community. The following positions are open for nominations: SGPS President, Vice President Campaign and Community Affairs, Vice President Finance and Services, Vice President Graduate, Vice President Professional, and lastly, SGPS Trustee. Each position comes with its unique set of responsibilities. For instance, the SGPS President represents students to senior administrators, serves on the Senate and Board of Trustees, and leads the SGPS team. The Vice President Finance and Services ensures that student fees are collected and allocated responsibly, chairs the finance committee, and oversees services like the health and dental benefits plan. For graduate students, the Vice President Graduate advocates for their needs, manages peer academic advisors, and represents their interest at various university committees. Professional students, who often have distinct needs, are represented by the Vice President Professional. This position focuses on outreach and advocacy for those in demanding professional programs. Finally, the SGPS Trustee represents graduate and professional students on the university's Board of Trustees, offering a student perspective on financial and strategic matters. This two-year volunteer position is critical for long-term decision-making. Here are some important dates for you to remember. The nominations will stay open till Tuesday, January 14th. Campaign runs from January 16th to January 27th. The All Candidates Debate happens January 22nd, and our station will be covering these debates. Voting takes place from Wednesday, January 29th to Thursday, January 30th, with ballots sent via Simply Voting. Finally, the results will be announced on Friday, January 31st at 9 a.m. If you're interested in running for a position, more information is available on the SGPS website at sgps.ca or via Instagram at Queens SGPS. And that's a wrap for this segment of Campus Corner. I'm Abiyaz from CFRC News.
Hello, Queens University. I'm Isabella Garrido, your CFRC sports reporter, and welcome to this week's segment of the CFRC Sports Desk, where we bring you the latest and greatest on Gales athletics. Let's dive into the highlights from a weekend packed with action and excitement. The Queens Gales women's basketball team kept their winning streak alive with an 80-57 victory over the Nipissing Lakers. Number 0 Amy Hagman dominated the court, sinking 6 three-pointers and finishing with 21 points. Despite a slow start, the Gales found their rhythm in the second quarter, building a lead they carried through to the end. The team showcased their range, scoring 15 threes throughout the entire game. With this win, the Gales advanced to an impressive 10-2 season record. Catch them as they face the Ontario Tech Ridgebacks on January 15th at 6 p.m. Not to be outdone, the Gales men's basketball team put on a show with a dominant 111-76 win over Nipissing. Six players scored in double digits, with Luca Silas, AJ Cummings, and Ollie Engine leading the charge. Engine topped the score sheet with 23 points, and the Gales defense continued to be a force, setting the tone with strong physicality. A celebratory dunk by Kai Dallin and a buzzer beater three by Tyson Lama capped off the third quarter, extending the lead to 94-58. The Gales now boast a 10-2 record and look to continue their streak against Ontario Tech January 15th at 8 p.m. Over on the ice, the Queens Gales women's hockey team battled the top-ranked Nipissing Lakers, but fell 3-0 in their Pride celebration game. Over on the ice, the Queens Gales women's hockey team battled the top-ranked Nipissing Lakers, but fell 3-0 in their Pride celebration game. Goaltender Emma Tennant made 27 saves, keeping the Gales in the fight, but Nipissing Chantel Sandquist posted a shutout, frustrating Queens' attack despite their 39 shots on goal. The Gales' penalty kill was sharp, but repeated trips to the box hindered by their momentum. Queens will regroup and look ahead to a road game against the Brock Badgers on January 17th. That's all for today on the CFRC Sports Desk. I'm Isabella Garrido, and now back to Christina Laurie with your weather report for this evening.
This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We begin with Monday, January 13th. Slightly warmer conditions today, hovering around the 1 degree mark, with light flurries throughout the day, dropping down to -7 overnight. Tuesday, January 14th, we're going to see a high of -6 with a 30% chance of flurries, dropping to -10 overnight. Wednesday, January 15th, we are going to see a beautiful sunny day here in the city of Kingston, but it still will be quite chilly with a daytime high of -5, dropping to -13 overnight. Thursday, January 16th, daytime high of -3 with a 40% chance of flurries throughout the day, dropping down to -6 overnight. Friday, January 17th, slightly warmer at -2 and cloudy, only dropping down a single degree to -3 overnight. Saturday, January 18th, we're going to see a daytime high of 2 degrees, but there is a 60% chance of precipitation, a mix of flurries and rain showers, dropping down to -8 overnight. Sunday, January 19th, we will see a daytime high of -5 with a mix of sun and cloud. And as we move into the start of next week, temperatures are going to drop again. Monday, January 20th, we'll see a daytime high of -9, dropping to -16 overnight. And Tuesday, January 21st, it'll be cloudy with a daytime high of -11 and an overnight low of -17. This is Jesse Bell with your traffic report for the City of Kingston. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Charles Street, Bagot to Rideau is closed beginning January 13th at 7 a.m. to January 14th at 7 p.m. for the installation of a new gas service. Earl Street, Aberdeen to Division is closed until January 17th to support construction-related activity. University Avenue, Union to Stewart is closed January 13th to 14th for a crane lift on University Avenue. Wellington Street, Earl to Gore is closed January 13th to 18th to accommodate service tie-ins. Here are some other delays you should be aware of. Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen for a contractor to complete road and sewer reconstruction. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles / Edwin to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes phase 2 of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. And lastly, Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard at Elmwood. Expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roadways, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.